and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Everybody, look alive. Rocky Mountain Mike wants to know the Pope's going away lunch at the Vatican Olive Garden, 11:30, everybody. Get in early. It's going to be crowded.
I hear they have the best Italian food in Rome.
Right. Yeah. Right, exactly.
The best ethnic food in Rome.
More evidence that Jim Ward says the funniest stuff. As funny as he's on the show, he says the funniest stuff right before the show.
Uh-huh.
Like, for instance, you said.
I think I broke a table last night.
He said, I probably shouldn't drink vodka. It makes me angry.
Yeah. Wine makes me maudlin. Vodka makes me angry, like Mad Russian.
Is there is there something you drink that makes you a happy drunk? A giggly drunk, maybe?
I'll have to work on that.
Yeah. Sorry, somewhere between maudlin and angry?
Maybe a zero dark thirsty. Let's go.
A flirtini. There's no way you could be angry while drinking a flirtini.
I know this is going to be a little bit earth-shattering news, but Operation Drinking Less for me went into effect last night. It went very well. Thank you.
Really?
Yeah, Roland and I are going away on vacation in a couple of weeks,
uh-huh.
And we talked about just going cold turkey.
That's a little
drinking
heroin.
Less, and we were like, it's like Patsy and Adina go to rehab. How many bottles can we bring to rehab? That's what we're currently discussing.
Yeah, okay. There are several episodes that revolved around that.
That's exactly what we're doing.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
Which one is which? Are you Patsy or you?
I don't know. Doesn't matter. All right. The important thing is, guess who's here?
Oh.
Jackie Chan?
Carl.
I typed in K-A-R, and you can get
fullfightstrategies.com.
Carl Frisch or karate.
Yes, okay. He does do a little political jiu-jitsu.
Yes.
Here he is, Carl Frisch. Hello.
Hi, Carl.
Your tweets consist of political jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, let me move these cinder blocks out of the way.
Okay. Good. I loved your tweet. Now that Hagel is confirmed, Senate Republicans can get back to blocking everything else.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's their favorite pastime, apparently.
Yeah, absolutely. You say House Senate GOP could learn something from Chris Christie. People like you when you work with Obama. 74% approval rating, latest poll to be exact. Isn't that something?
Well, It is something. I don't know why 74% of New Jerseyans like Chris Christie. The only thing I can chalk it up to is that he worked with the president. So,
right.
I think House Republicans, I mean, if you look at any poll, the most unpopular, it's always fun to watch Boehner and the congressional Republicans talk about how Congress is just broadly unpopular.
Yeah, right.
Well, broadly unpopular because of how unpopular the Republicans are.
Yeah, exactly. Well, no, but I think it is an interesting case in point. Here's Chris Christie, who was roundly criticized by the Republican Party for working with the president, right, with her consent. Now he's just accepted the Medicaid expansion, and this has gotten him kicked out of CPAC.
He doesn't even get to go to that right-wing slumber party that we call CPAC.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody brings their sleeping bags and their hoods, their pillows.
And, of course, you saw it coming. Right-wing attacks on Michelle Obama for giving Argo Best Picture in 3, 2, oh, there it is.
Yeah.
I don't even think I had gotten to write type the number 2 before it had started.
Yeah. It's unbelievable, isn't it? I mean, you just think, and they literally say this is it will never happen. And then Laura Bush.
Right.
Reagan, by the way.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And then my friends are quick to point out, you know, they move the goalposts right away. Well, they didn't give Best Picture.
Right.
Okay, I get it.
Well,
that's what it is.
It changes everything. Yeah.
What
different?
Oh, my God.
When Michelle Obama does it, it's uppity. I don't know what the difference could be.
Hmm. Yeah, I have no problem with a first lady or a president giving an award or saying something. Obviously, if there's a point of criticism, it would be over hypocrisy. And if there was something hypocritical about Reagan or Laura Bush or Michelle Obama doing it, that'd be one thing.
Right.
But, there certainly wasn't with Michelle Obama.
Right.
Right. And then your last tweet, White House urges Supreme Court to strike down DOMA. I mean, this really is actually big stuff that's going on. That and the, what is it, what are we up to, 80 Republicans that have signed?
That was amazing, wasn't it,
Carl? Amicus brief?
Well, yeah, as of 8 o'clock this morning, I guess all the briefs are in. I think they announced over 100, Republicans of various levels of success within their party, have come out against. Right, and important.
Yeah.
And there are some pretty great names on there. I mean, you got Christy Todd Whitman, which I
Yeah.
Thought, oh, that's interesting. You know, she was a holdout back in the day for marriage equality. So
David Frum just wrote a piece why he signed the brief.
It's a good step in the right direction. It's not all the typical names that you're used to seeing, like Margaret Hoover and Dick
right.
Cheney and stuff. So
I can
it was
make,
nice to see.
I can make one prediction is Antonin Scalia will say something incredibly irritating and homophobic during the
Stephanie, these are really just sexual orientation entitlements. But
Yes, I'm just
I mean, did everybody see that or hear that? You didn't hear it or see it.
About the Voting Rights Act.
Yeah.
There was
Carl,
no audio and there was no
video.
Explain what you mean. But during oral arguments yesterday, which sounds much more exciting than it is, at the Supreme Court, there's a case called Shelby County in Alabama versus Holder, which is challenging the constitutionality of key provisions of the Voting Rights Act of 1965, which obviously people know protects the rights of people of color to vote.
Mm-hmm.
It was also one of the it was the seminal thing that made it so that all those voting rights laws or voting ID laws didn't go through like they planned last time around. So during the oral arguments, Scalia called the Voting Rights Act a racial entitlement.
Is that unbelievable? And he said the fact that there's been a unanimous vote for it means there must be something wrong with it.
Right, and I hate to break it to Scalia. This is interesting. If Scalia is right that a Senate vote is suspicious and may lack legitimacy because it's unanimous,
right,
it's worth remembering that he was confirmed to the Supreme Court on a 98-0 vote.
Oh, perhaps that deems him looking into.
So I don't know if it's a chip on his shoulder or what.
Right, interesting.
But leave it to Justice Scalia. And what this really sets up is, what is Justice Roberts going to do? Is he going to show that the Supreme Court believes Scalia's argument that this is about racial set-asides? Or is he going to take the mountain of evidence that there is still a problem with racial discrimination when it comes to voting?
Yeah.
And remember, even if you are included in the Voting Rights Act, it doesn't mean you have to be forever. If you can show the federal government that for 10 years you've not tried to keep people from voting with various rules or restrictions based on the color of their skin, you can be opted out. They call it being bailed out of the Voting Rights Act.
Yep.
So it's not a permanent thing. Shelby County could show 10 years of consistency and be out of the Voting Rights Act, but they can't do that.
Absolutely. Good stuff. Oh, by the way, in other Pope news, very quickly, Rocky Mountain Mike also wants to know, Pope Benedict has vowed obedience to his successor, new Pope, and will take the name Pope Classic.
It's better than Crystal Pope.
Let's dive into the right-wing world and see what's doing, shall we? All right, Monica Crowley on Fox News.
First of all, President Obama and the Democrats had massive congressional majorities in his first 2 years, so let's get off the obstructionist point. After that, when the Republicans got control of the House, Republicans have done nothing but compromise. They tried to compromise on the debt ceiling.
They have shut down a lot of President Obama's agenda,
They gave President Obama the tax hike he wanted. Where is the balance coming from the president?
The president
wants a balanced approach. Where did he give him the...
Wow.
Let's just review. Did she just say House Republicans have done nothing but compromise with the president?
She did.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It's ridiculous listening like that gives Fox News a bad name. Let's review the evidence, okay? First of all, they did not have a supermajority for 2 years. Even if you think that they did have a supermajority for any period of time, remember that they didn't have 60 votes in the Senate until almost a year into the Senate. Term because Al Franken took that long to get to the Senate. And then even after that, they didn't have 60 votes because you had Joe Lieberman sitting out there as an independent. So they never had a supermajority in the Senate, and it is a fact. It is a fundamental fact, which I realize the right thinks has a liberal bias, that the Republicans in the Senate have filibustered more and blocked more nominations than any Senate in the history of the Senate.
Yep. Yep, there you go. Facts and figures. All right, Sean Hannity, is he fresh from his ass-kicking by Keith Ellison?
Yes.
Look, to me, we're stealing from our kids. And I'm trying to get... He won't even acknowledge Obama gave us $6 trillion in debt. I mean, these Obama supporters, what is wrong with them? They can't acknowledge basic, simple truths.
Wow.
Project much?
Once again, arguing about numbers.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, he's like the epitome of the man looking in the mirror. It'd be one thing if you know, if O'Reilly has gotten really good at claiming that, too. He'll put up a a number that says the debt was this in this year and it's this now, without explaining where the money came from. You know, not talking about how during the Bush administration, to make things look hunky-dory, we didn't put the wars in Iraq or Afghanistan on the budget, which means that we paid for them, but we didn't tell you how we were paying for them. He didn't talk about how Medicare Part D was not paid for. He didn't talk about how the Bush tax cuts drove the deficit and how that makes up for almost all the spending. So, yeah. I'm not surprised in the slightest.
Has anyone ever actually said that to Sean Hannity? Has he ever had to actually respond to that?
No, he hasn't.
That this is not the president's sixth whatever in debt. I mean,
Stephanie, you want to hear what that would sound like?
Yes.
How about I play Keith Ellison, you play Sean Hannity, and
okay.
Tell me that.
All right. Okay. The president's put a $6 trillion, whatever, what is it, trillion? Of debt on our children.
You're wrong, Keith. If you don't, you're wrong, and you're a liberal, and you're just apologizing for the president. So
okay,
that's how that goes.
And scene. Okay. Thank you, Carl Frist.
I will have Michelle Obama accepting the award on my behalf.
Thank you. All right, Rush Limbaugh.
This is an impeachable offense. This is in direct violation of the oath of office. Defend and protect the Constitution of the United States and the people. We're just opening the doors of prisons before the sequester
aliens.
Has even happened, before there have been any budget cuts. This is so childish.
Okay, first of all, ICE has said these are not dangerous criminals.
Right.
You know, again, it's because of the Republicans that we have the sequester.
Right.
And these are not, this is completely untrue, right, Carl?
Yeah, well, and in translation, we're talking about brown people on the streets, my friends. Rush Limbaugh at this point has become a caricature of himself.
Exactly. All right, Carl Frist remains in the sidecar. We continue Right Wing World after this. 19 minutes after the hour, right back. More Right Wing World with Carl Frist on the Stephanie Miller Show.
The station where the handbasket to hell leaves from. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Better than
girl.
In the whole damn town. Better than old King Kong. Meaner than the junkyard dog.
Yeah, Jim, you know, that's the thing with addiction. Sometimes you got to wean yourself instead of go cold turkey. You know, Mama, two glasses of wine last night. Very exciting. Didn't get drunk. Everything's
good.
You know, Screaming Goats, it might take longer. Once you go down the Screaming Goats rabbit hole.
I thought I was done. Shark.
Yes, the Screaming
jumped
Goats
the
jumped the shark probably yesterday. However, when someone sends you this, you have to, you know. Mm-hmm. And I will always love you.
Love
Like just one more.
Wow.
That's the last one.
That is the very
then
last
I'm done,
one.
I'm done. My addiction's done.
Very last one.
Good morning again, Carl Frisch. You know you wanted it.
That was incredible. Yeah. Well, I thought we got enough of the Screaming Goat with Scalia yesterday.
Yeah.
Carl Frisch, officially on fire today. All right, we continue Right Wing World. Steve Ducey, Fox and Friends.
By releasing, so far, 300, 400, 500, they're talking about, down in Pinal County, they've heard from ICE, it could be 10,000. Mm-hmm. What they're doing is they're hoping by releasing these people in advance of the sequester, it puts the heat on the Republicans to go ahead and cave on taxes, which they're not going to. Plus,
really?
You know, to take an old phrase, never let a good sequestration go to waste. There's a real good possibility the administration simply throwing their amnesty fans a bone. Look what we did. We're on your side.
What?
Yeah, that is that old saying, isn't it?
It
was the 1920s, if I remember it right, when that phrase was coined. No, it's never happened before. And I love the way that Fox News talks about this kind of stuff. It's like, they're letting brown people on the street.
Yeah.
Yes.
Republicans will not compromise,
even though
brown people are being let out on the street.
Yes. I mean, that obviously is the meme. And as we've said, ICE has said these are not dangerous criminals. It's just, you know, these are the consequences of a sequester, right?
Well, I mean, you say dangerous, they say brown. What's the difference?
All right. Stan Solomon, on the Talk to Solomon radio show.
Yeah, this guy.
Okay.
In the year 2013, we're going to see a an explosion of attacks on white haves by black have-nots, and more specifically, on Christian, heterosexual white haves by black Muslim and or atheist, not that there's much difference, black have-nots. If you're a white, heterosexual, Christian, working, married person, if you don't have a gun on you, know how to use it, and make sure that everyone in your family who's of age has a weapon and knows how to use it, there's at least a substantial chance that you and or some member of your family will be hurt and or killed.
By black people.
That was so inclusive, I don't even know where to start. That was like, you know what, that was like the mirror image of Obama's speech at that convention about the red states and the blue states.
I have
How can
a
I
weird,
divide? Yes,
I was trying to keep a weird, messed up Venn diagram
of
all the people that are included and excluded.
Yes.
You know who was sitting in that interview with him and agreed with him was the president of the Gun Owners of America, which a lot of right-wing media outlets have been pumping up that guy, and he agreed. So next time you see the head of the Gun Owners of America, just remember he thinks there's a race war coming that Obama's going to arm black, have a black army.
Gun Owners of America are the right-wing version of the NRA, if that's possible.
Right. They're so right-wing that they don't even have wings.
You're just planning your next drive-by of a white, straight,
Lord,
Christian,
Lord,
married man.
Lord, make me a bird. Make me a bird so I can fly far, far away from the race war that's coming.
Wow.
Okay. Dennis Miller on O'Reilly to finish up. Here
we go.
You know,
Billy, I was going to skip the Oscars this year, but I was in my office at home, and I had the 24-hour-a-day all Barack Obama channel on, and there it was right between her gardening show, Obama Mama, and his in-house American Bandstand dance show, Obama Rama. There were the Oscars. And then, of course, on her way home last night, she stopped and sunk a mid-court shot at halftime of the Washington Wizard game for $10,000. And they just announced him as one of the new cast members in Dancing with the Stars. It's a good day to be Obama. You see photo ops of him in every single aspect of his day-to-day life, save, what do they call that? Oh, yeah, governance. I never see any of those shots.
Wow. Is that supposed to be funny?
That's the comedy section.
Is there a
section,
joke in there somewhere?
That's the comedy
Maybe
section.
Maybe he should quit writing jokes in his own office and leave it to his writers.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he's
See, as
still
Jim
not
has
funny
tried
since,
to point out to
Rick
the,
Overton stopped
the,
writing for him.
Right, to the fledgling comedy people, it needs to be based on some sort of truth.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right, and simply popular. calling Bill O'Reilly Billy doesn't start it off as a joke,
that's not,
by the way.
Please, call me Chachi. All right, thank you, Carl.
Wow.
Have a good one.
You
thank
too.
You, bye, Carl. Good to see you. All right, Representative Linda, back, Chachi. Please call me Babe for the rest of the show.
Okay, Babe.
Do it. Thanks. All right. Representative Linda Sanchez next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
You know, there's enough tuna and Merlot to last me 2 weeks. But where would I pee? Oh, I'll just go in the empty bottles. Yay.
Problem solver.
Yeah.
All right, 34 minutes after the hour, it is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 1-800-STEPH12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. One of our very personal favorites, one of Congressional Dance Moms.
Yes.
Congresswoman Linda Sanchez of the Dance and Sanchez Sisters joins us now. Good morning, Congresswoman.
Good morning. Clearly, my reputation precedes me.
I can't remember which parade I saw you guys dancing in, but I knew well enough not to have a dance-off with you. That's all I remember.
That's funny.
All right. Good morning, Congresswoman.
Good morning.
Oh,
how are
boy.
You,
I'm well, happy sequester week to you.
Yes.
Yeah.
This
boy.
Is really, I don't know what to say. All the Republicans seem interested in is the blame game. I was reading somewhere that Boehner's spokesperson said, we think we've succeeded in, making sure that people know it's the president's fault. It's like, no, you haven't.
No.
Look at any poll, right?
Right. And it's, these guys are so, I'm trying to be diplomatic here,
right.
But they're silly because they need to own this. They voted for this. Eric Cantor voted for this. The sequester, which is just a stupid name for deep, hurtful cuts,
right,
was part of the Budget Control Act that they passed last fall. I didn't vote for it because it was stupid, deep cuts. And here we are. They're going to come into effect tomorrow, and now they're trying to say somehow it's the president's fault. I mean, it's unbelievable how they're not willing to take responsibility for anything. And this is the same group that's always, you know, ranting and raving about people need personal responsibility in this country.
Well, you know, and obviously White House strategists are saying they believe the constant drip, drip, drip of bad news is that's slowly going to emerge from congressional districts across the country, you know, generating negative headlines, is going to put Republicans on the defensive. And I know that, you know, our friend Charlie Pierce we had on yesterday was talking about this. You know, there are local news programs everywhere that these are going to be all the stories, right?
I mean, absolutely. It's going to affect every single district in this country. Just the talk of sequester has already injected uncertainty into the economy. Consumer confidence is down. The markets are going to be down. But people are going to feel the very real impacts in each and every district, because we're talking about letting go of law enforcement and public safety personnel, letting go, you know, of course, of teachers and, you know, Head Start teachers, cutting right. meals for seniors and food insecure, you know, women and children. I mean, you name it, it's going to be affected by sequester. And this was the Republicans' brilliant idea in the Budget Control Act.
Congresswoman, it doesn't seem like, obviously, from what I'm hearing, there's any attempts at last-minute negotiations. Are there? It sounds like this meeting Friday is after the sequester takes place, right?
Right. I mean, we've known this is coming for a long time, and pretty much the Republicans have dug in their heels and said, you know, first they tried to back out the military cuts and say, you know, 100% of the cuts on domestic programs. They're not willing to talk about revenue raisers. They don't want to take a balanced approach. And there is a certain ideological group within the Republican Party that thinks these sequester cuts, you know, are going to curb government spending, and so it's good for us in the long term because, you know, the number one issue for them is deficit reduction.
Right.
If you talk to people across the country, yes, we're concerned about deficit spending, but the number one fear and the number one issue of people is, am I going to have a job tomorrow, and am I going to be able to support my family?
Right.
That's more important to them than, you know, these drastic across-the-board cuts, again, dumb, deep cuts, that are going to, you know, wind up, you know, forcing people to lose their jobs or be furloughed. And that's just not good for the economy.
Right. I mean, Congresswoman Sanchez, I think it was, I'm not sure who, CBO or who, but somebody said, I mean, this could be up to 1 million jobs. I mean, the president said people are going to lose their jobs. You just talked about people's number one concern. I mean, that is it, isn't it?
This is going to mean job loss. And we are still in the stages of economic recovery. We've been seeing positive signs. There's been a sort of a pattern of, you know, a slow but steady climb out of the, you know, recession hole that we were in. But these cuts are going to send us right back to the drawing board, because it's going to mean higher unemployment rates. It's going to mean, you know, less consumer spending, less investment by businesses. They get spooked. They don't want to hire people. I mean, it's just a downward spiral all over again.
Yeah. Congresswoman, obviously, we just finished Right Wing World, and the fear-mongering is all, oh, you know, the president is releasing dangerous criminals into the street, which, of course, is code for brown people in Right Wing World. You know, and obviously ICE has said they are not releasing criminal detainees.
No, these are low-risk folks that are on, you know, electronic ankle monitors. They're people that don't have any kind of past history of any kind of violence. And again, it's this attempt to sort of cast all immigrants in the light of, you know, they're all dangerous to us, they all hurt this country, when that's simply not the case. These are oftentimes very productive citizens that contribute a lot to their community and a lot to the economy. And so because of the cuts that they're anticipating, they're simply
right,
going to the least harmful solution, which is, you know,
right,
to allow the most productive folks to be not physically detained.
Congresswoman Sanchez, you know, it's interesting. You heard your colleague John Boehner say the Senate needs to get off its ass. That's
yes.
the problem. But
yeah.
Your colleague, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, said this yesterday.
It is entirely within the purview of Congress to pass legislation and send it to the president. So actually the real question is why isn't John Boehner reaching out to Harry Reid, sitting down with Nancy Pelosi and Mitch McConnell and hammering out a compromise?
Hello.
Yeah, John Boehner telling the Senate they need to get off their ass, that's the pot calling the kettle black.
Yeah, exactly.
Or orange in his case, but yes.
Right. I mean, if you look at the few legislative days that we've even been in, and you look at the legislative schedule in terms of what Boehner will allow to come to the floor for a vote, it's meaningless and nothing. There's nothing going on up here. There's no legislation moving out of the House. We can't even get the must-pass pieces of legislation done because Boehner can't even get his caucus, to support anything that, you know, that would do take care of the country's business. They just are the party of no. They're the party of, you know, compromise is a dirty word. They're not governing this country. And what I find highly ironic, these are the folks that are constantly harping about how we need certainty for businesses so they can plan for the future and they can plan their hiring and they can plan their investing. And they are the folks who've been in charge the last 2 years and this term too, who've injected the most uncertainty into the economy by playing these stupid games of we're not going to pay our bills, we're not going to do the nation's business because we want it 100% our way, and it's our way or the highway.
Yeah.
I just find it highly ironic. Again, they're trying to pass the buck and trying to, you know, pass responsibility off onto somebody else because they won't take personal responsibility for it.
Yep. We just played someone on Fox News and Right Wing World that said congressional Republicans have done nothing but compromise with the president. And I'm sure that's exactly how you remember it.
Sure.
So, I mean, yes. Do you remember the little book 1984 by George Orwell? Where bad is good and
right, up is down. Yep.
That's the world we're living in. Everything is upside down. They will look at something that is white and they will say it's black, and they will try to twist it and they'll contort themselves, and they'll just basically flat out misrepresent things because they think it suits their purposes. But I think the American public's smarter than that.
You know what? And once again, Representative, they're actively rooting against America. They are hoping these cuts hurt, and then so they can blame the president. I mean, they don't. That's all they seem interested in.
Right. Their game right now is they are willing to sink the ship in order to drown the captain.
They
don't care if they
said.
Run the country into the ground because then they can point the finger and say it's Obama's fault.
Yes, they are saying iceberg dead ahead. Go faster.
Exactly.
Representative Sanchez, I'm sorry I can't speak at that. There's a power chick breakfast in your honor, and we determined that it would take me 14 and a half hours to get from Burbank to Long Beach at 9
a.m. in the morning.
When I get off the air here in Burbank Pacific time. But I wish you well. I'll be there in spirit, and thanks so much, as always, for coming on with us.
We appreciate it, Stephanie, so
all
much.
Right.
Thanks again.
You too. There she goes, Representative Sanchez.
Yes, maybe there'll be something in the future you can do.
Yeah, we Google map that. That's, yeah. We're like, I would love to, however, you cannot get there from here. Not at 9 a.m. Pacific.
No.
Not without a helicopter.
Yeah. Last time I had to go somewhere, you guys laughed out loud at me. Like,
how long did it take you, by the way, to get to Culver City from Burbank?
Like an hour.
Yeah.
For my film that I had to shoot on Monday.
Well, your call time was 10, so that should have put you there, like, right on time.
I had to get to the exotic movie location of Culver City. A dry wash.
The culvert.
You know what?
A culvert.
Yeah.
Of culverts.
The Wizard of Oz.
It was glamorous.
The Wizard of Oz was filmed in Culver City, so there you go.
There you go.
And Gone with the Wind.
Yes.
We were just talking to Carl Frisch about, big news on marriage equalities these days. The big news yesterday was dozens of Republicans. What did he say, 100? Has it been 100 total?
It's up to 100 now, yeah. I think, yeah.
Signed the legal brief to the Supreme Court in favor of same-sex marriage rights. Almost as interesting, in fact, 60 businesses have also filed brief supporting gay couples' right to marry. Alcoa, American International Group, Panasonic, Nike, Office Depot, Barnes & Noble, and Xerox. Although Xerox did it first and then everyone else copied.
Yeah.
I went all the way there just for that joke. They did it first. Xerox did it first.
Really? Really?
Paul, how are we doing on time?
Andrew Sullivan said these businesses want to attract the best workforces they can, and they are in states that treat gay couples as second-class citizens. They may lose them. He adds, in the end, the free market matters, and in the end, it wants gay equality.
Yep.
Thank you, Andrew. And thank you, Xerox. Copy that. Copy that, Xerox. 45.
Really? God.
Yeah, I did again. I went there again. See, the first joke, I like banged it into the ground with like a metal railroad spike, and then I went back and I got it again.
You're making my tummy
Bam!
Hurt.
Bam! Shark jumped. Okay. Bada
boom, bada bing. Yeah.
45 minutes.
What, am I a clown? I'm here to amuse you?
I cannot get any support up in here.
No, you can't.
45
Not
minutes.
For that.
45 minutes. Copyright out there, Rock. 45 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Fresh Republican outrage. You keep listening, she'll make more. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
I'm like this with the peas, as you know. Me and the Will I Am hung at the inauguration. I did.
That's a pea. Are you counting Taboo?
He's a pea. He's a pea.
Are you counting?
He's a pea. A pea's a pea.
We had Taboo on the show. Are you counting the lesser peas?
No. Yes. A child of a lesser P, and that's okay.
Okay. He ain't Fergie.
It's like being a child of a lesser Baldwin. It's all right. Okay. They all count. Okay, 51 minutes after the hour.
I don't think Daniel Baldwin counts.
No. All right, I didn't mean him.
Okay.
This hour brought to you by GoToMyPC.com. Access your entire work computer from your smartphone or tablet like we do with the GoToMyPC mobile apps. How much do we love them? Amazing. Mm-hmm. Want you to try GoToMyPC free for 45 days. For my special offer, visit GoToMyPC.com, click on the Try It Free button, and type in the promo code Stephanie, won't you? 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number, toll-free from anywhere. Oh, you know what I forgot to say?
What?
We have a former senior, a top interrogator. Remember I read that piece, what is it called? Sex, Lies, in Hollywood about Zero Dark 30?
Mm-hmm.
How it's,
Torture, Lies in Hollywood, something like
right.
that.
Right. Yeah. Jim was right. Dick Cheney was the technical advisor. That's what the problem with it is. And we, anyway, he's Ali Soufan is the one that wrote that piece in the New York Times. He's from the Soufan Group.
That's right.
He joins us next hour to talk about that. Uh-huh. And also a Jackie's Healthcare Corner.
Woot!
Wee!
Okay. One... Did you more just say we?
Yeah, what was that
Is he
all
an adult
about?
That just said we?
Wee.
He's the most cynical adult I know, and he just said we.
We.
And what's not spectacular about that?
We.
All right. Let's go to Sherry in Massachusetts. Hi, Sherry.
Hello there.
Hello there.
I'm from the People's Republic of Massachusetts.
Hello.
And
hello.
I was listening to that Gun Owners of America spokesmaniac talking, unleashing his monsters of the id on the air. And I had a feeling of how this was an eerie parallel to Radio Rwanda, which released a wave of violence on the population there by stirring up hate. And it's absolutely hair-raising. And I think the folks at Fox and other media outlets are enabling this type of thing. I happen to think the First Amendment is central to our democracy. And Justice Brandeis said that the cure for bad speech is not censorship, but more speech. So more people in media need to expose these nuts and this kind of hate and fear-mongering on low-information listeners the way you have been doing.
Yes. Yes. That's exactly more
Stephanie Miller.
The answer to everything. Don't you think, Sherry?
I absolutely.
Thank
absolutely.
You. Thank you. I hope I didn't beat that out of you.
The thing is, anytime there are these horrific tragedies like Newtown, gun sales go up.
Right.
It's good for business. The NRA is promoting the gun manufacturers.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we were saying that. Wayne LaPierre does not even speak for NRA members. He speaks for the gun buying, lobby. That's exactly right. I mean, you look at all these latest polls that came out. What is it? 61% of Americans want stricter gun control laws. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God, did you see that Sandy Hook parent last night on, I forget his name.
Yesterday, he was testifying before Congress,
holding the picture and crying. Mm-hmm. How are you a human and not, and he was talking about banning assault weapons. And how horrific
Christ
is that?
Just in the tank for Obama.
To listen to him have to talk about the specific injuries his son suffered. And how he died, and literally, it's just heartbreaking. And then another edition of You're Not Helping. I just stole Jackie Sheckman's feature.
Okay.
Idaho lawmaker, force all adults into militias to protect gun rights. See, there's a problem solver.
Sure.
What would that solve?
You'll be shocked to know it's a Republican lawmaker, Jim. A Republican lawmaker in Idaho has proposed an amendment to the state constitution that would require all adults to be militia members in an effort to preserve their right to bear arms. State Senator Jim Rice said he feared the U.S. Supreme Court would change the definition of the Second Amendment and allow the federal government to confiscate guns owned by individuals. He argued that the federal government could never take away the people's guns if the Idaho Constitution was changed to make all adults members of the state militia, and that, just as a backstop.
Right, and that would get around the constitutional requirement that it be for a well-regulated militia.
Right, because it'd be everybody. Be that, criminals, be everybody. Mentally ill, everybody.
I see where he's going.
Yeah.
A first step for
5-year-olds.
Idaho seceding from the Union.
Which, you know, okay. Except for Coeur d'Alene. Coeur d'Alene is lovely.
Is it? Oh, okay.
Yes.
Margo in Indiana.
There are other places to get potatoes.
Margo in Indiana, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hey, Margo.
Hi, Stephanie.
Hi.
You are the greatest.
Thank
you. Guys with you. I want to talk about the, I understand they worked 147 days in 2012. Congress,
right.
The voters should be able to vote that. Whatever you call that mad, stupid party, they're 50% pay cut. They don't deserve over $50,000 a year. They don't work, and they're a bunch of fascist terrorists, and they're working against our government. They should all be put in prison for what they're doing to our country.
Oh, dear. You are really, she's on a real tear today.
Yes.
Okay, Senator Harry Reid on the sequestration.
Republicans are too busy fighting among themselves to unite behind a course of action, so they're instead doing nothing. Zero.
Don't make me say posterior again.
I'm sorry you had to hear me like this.
You wouldn't like me if I'm angry.
He's Mormon. He doesn't curse.
I'm absolutely furious.
I have offered him, Jim, many times to work on his outside voice. A little bit more. A little bit too much of an inside voice
I'm
for
livid.
A senator.
I'm livid. I'm sorry you had to see me this way.
I know it's hard to digest so much passion coming from one man.
I'm beside myself.
Okay. He makes Senator Mitch McConnell look like a some sort of, I don't know, like a madman. Like a, who am I thinking of?
Incredible Hulk.
Nicolas Cage of the Senate.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Hulk Turtle.
I turn green. Oh, wait, I already am.
He wasn't elected to work with the Congress he wants. He was elected to work with the Congress he has.
Yeah, yeah.
And he tries to work with him. And over
and over again.
He's tried to work with the douche nozzles he has. However, it's, you know. Pardon me?
You don't go to war with the army you wish you had.
No.
You go to war with the country you never should have started the war with in the first place.
Right. Thank you. Thank you, Mitch.
Wow.
Moment of honesty.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we come back. Great, great piece about the establishment's Obama derangement syndrome. We've talked about this with Eric Bollard and others, but that's the thing that's incredible. It really is this media, both sides, or there's just, it's this, you know, bipartisan gridlock. It is not. It is entirely one side's fault, and they can't, it is incredible how they pick that up. The president's not leading in some way. We'll talk about that. And Jackie's Healthcare Corner as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's The Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll-free from anywhere. Robert McFadden, former senior NCIS official and top interrogator at the bottom of the hour, to talk about Ali Sufan's op-ed from the New York Times regarding Zero Dark Thirty and torture. Great stuff. Hollywood lies and torture. Great stuff. Turns out it was all...
Yeah.
That's why I was quoting from that this week. All right. So important stuff coming up on healthcare. And so that, you know what that means. Yep.
Hello world, here's the news that's springing. Come on, Miss Jackie.
Hello, Jackie Schechner.
Well, good morning.
Good morning, Nurse Jackie. All right.
I feel the need to be cheery after that song comes on.
I know. I like that one.
You make us happy.
Aww.
Okay. You said a piece. States saying no to healthcare marketplaces is good news. Obamacare has a better chance of success if it's taken out of the hands of Republican governors who want to see it fail, according to this article. It makes a good point, right?
Yes. Well, Richard Kirsch was the national campaign manager for Healthcare for America Now, which was the big coalition that I worked with to help pass healthcare reform. And one of the things Richard's very good at is breaking down complicated healthcare policy into understandable terms. He's kind of the guy that I learned it from. And he's got a Huffington Post piece up, and also it's on the blog for the Roosevelt Institute. And he talks about the healthcare bill and what passed in the House versus what passed in the Senate. And what passed in the House was the idea of a national healthcare exchange. And what passed in the Senate, the watered-down version that we ended up getting, was the idea that states could set up their own exchanges. But the default position is if the states don't want to do it, the federal government takes over, and that's now the case in some 25 states, and then there's a partnership in seven others.
Yes, and by the way, that's what you are here at the Stephanie Miller Show. You're the mama bird, and you regurgitate little pieces of healthcare information into our mouths.
That's kind of disgusting.
Little easily digestible, understandable bits.
Yes.
And little gross.
Right. Now,
mixed with chunks of worm.
Ew!
What? What?
Okay, now.
Now you're going to tell me worm's high in protein. For
it is.
Building.
That's right.
It's in protein. Jim tries to tell me that every day.
Oh, dude.
See what you did there.
Line.
It's
and then you
me
went, yes, over.
Yes. He writes, Jackie, it's good news that half the states are refusing to have anything to do with the new health insurance marketplaces being set up under the Affordable Care Act. He said resistance by Republican governors is leading to implementation of the law in a way that is much closer to, as you just said, the House bill. But I think the point is better, right, than having people that don't really believe in it implement it badly, right?
Correct. You don't want guys like Rick Scott and Rick Perry, really anyone named Rick. No.
Right. anyone named Rick should be
excluded. Rick Springfield? No.
Definitely
not.
No.
Not sure he'd
Rick
be good at
Schroeder? No.
No, you don't want these governors who have been adamantly against the Affordable Care Act from the very beginning responsible for setting up the exchanges, because ultimately they'd like to see them fail. They want a proof of concept, right? But they want to prove that the Affordable Care Act is no good. So why would you allow them or want them to be in charge of these state-based
right.
exchanges?
They
so
say,
the idea that they're saying no and defaulting to the federal government is a good thing for us consumers in the long run.
He says we can be sure that governors in these states would do the minimum amount under the law to sign people up or to protect consumers from high-priced, poor-quality health insurance plans. On the other hand, he writes, some of the other states that have decided to set up their own marketplaces are doing what the authors of the House law hope, being models like Massachusetts, of course, which has been running a marketplace since 2007, is a trailblazer. They did an excellent job promoting health care coverage, making it easy to sign up either online or in person. So that's going to be a big thing, right? The ease of being able to do this and of people being able to understand it.
Right. I mean, that's going to be a big thing, is to try and make the purchase of health insurance not only easier, but also easier to understand, because it's complicated. And you know, every time you need to enroll in some sort of health insurance plan, you've got pages and pages of complicated language, and it's very difficult to go through. And so the idea of the exchange would be to make it just more palatable all around. The other thing that I think it's important to note is that the federal government has an indication it's going to partner with some local institutions to kind of help get these exchanges up and running, so they'll at least have hopefully some community health centers involved, that there'll be some alternatives to just these large insurance companies if possible. But it's all going to be online, and that's going to hopefully make it easier for people to get involved.
Jackie, for those who have just tuned in or don't understand it, so by October all these exchanges will be up and running, but for just a layperson, what does that mean, and what do you do? How do you find out about it? What does that mean for the average consumer?
Well, you think about it in terms of, like, when you travel shop online, right? You go to like Expedia or Orbit or Kayak, and it aggregates all of the information, and you can choose your flights and your hotels and that kind of thing. So what it's going to do is aggregate all of the health care plans in your state, what's available, and you'll be able to comparison shop, and then you'll be able to pick and choose what you'd like online in this marketplace.
So,
I mean, they call it an exchange, but it's a marketplace.
So individuals, say, you know, we're here in California, individuals, say, you know, have a crappy plan now or that doesn't cover much, or say, you know, I mean, I have plans here for my small business, literally this show.
Yes.
Are you going to be able to shop and go, can I get a better deal or can I get a better plan?
Individuals and some small businesses will be allowed to do that. It's not going to be open to large businesses at the onset, but it will be open to individuals and small business. But we have to keep in mind through all of this that a large portion of people still get their health insurance through work. Like 95% of people still get their health insurance through work. So we're talking about hopefully covering, you know, millions of people. Richard writes the marketplaces are projected to cover 12 million in 2012 and 29 million by 2021. I don't know why he said 2012. That seems a little.
Yes.
It should be 2014.
Right.
Yeah. I think it may be a misprint. But,
what are you? Oh, right. Unless you're Benjamin Button. What?
Yeah. What? Next year. No, it would be 2014. I think that's a typo. And then 29 million by 2021. So we're talking about millions and millions of people, but a majority of people still do get their health insurance benefits through their workplace.
As you know, as a small business owner, I'm always looking for ways to exclude Chris so I can save money. But
yes.
What you're saying is we could find like maybe a better, a more affordable plan as a small business as well, right?
Yes, you could find a more affordable plan, and also it's not going to be able to reject people with pre-existing conditions.
Right.
And that's a big thing. If you've ever had to go off on your own, look, a lot of people lose their jobs, and when they lose their jobs, they lose their benefits. And if you've ever tried to go out on the insurance market by yourself and try to buy an individual plan,
that's
the
right,
insurance
Chris.
Companies are very good at either overpricing it or rejecting you outright for a pre-existing condition. And they define the pre-existing condition. So if you've got a hangnail, it could be a pre-existing condition. I mean, it's just whatever they want it to be. There's no standard as for what is and isn't considered. So now these insurance exchanges will allow everybody to buy an affordable plan or get a tax subsidy or taxpayer subsidy depending on how much money you make. It's on a sliding scale based on your income to help you afford a health insurance plan.
I don't have a hangnail. You know why? Because you talked me into getting gels. What do you think of the new colors? Seriously, what do you think?
Oh,
she
I
can
like
see
that.
Oh, can you see her?
Yes.
Yeah, I can. It's like a reddish color.
Right.
Huh?
Isn't it nice?
It's better than the Pepto-Bismol pink she had before.
I do like that. I'm actually going to take that into consideration as I get mine
redone.
Thank
you.
They look like
thank
M&Ms.
You. I always forget who's watching on TV and who's on the radio. Someone called yesterday and said, I love your new nails. I'm like, what? Oh!
Who are you?
We're on TV. What, okay.
What are you doing?
All right. Dave in North Carolina, you're on Jackie's Healthcare Corner. Hey, Dave.
Hey there. How you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Technically, you're well, but anyway. I've been dying for ages to say these six words on your radio station, mm-hmm. and the six words are, health insurance for profit is immoral.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
That's generally accepted
Amen.
Everywhere in the world outside of the United States. As you yeah. can tell mm-hmm. from my accent, I'm absolutely appalled.
As an American, I'm appalled.
Yes, I'm appalled.
Well, I'm Geraldston Ringgold.
Born in New York, so I'm an American, but... you know, having been raised in England, if you want private health insurance, you're perfectly entitled to buy it if you don't want to go on the national health.
Right.
But those companies, by statute, by law, are not for profit.
Mm-hmm. You know, Dave, what is it they're saying? You know, we're entitled to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Isn't life, Jackie, wouldn't life be the first thing?
Yeah.
Like, shouldn't,
yeah.
I mean, Dave is right. Isn't the whole concept wrong in this country? It's just,
yes.
For
yes.
profit,
because
yes.
We're not voluntary. Consumers in the healthcare marketplace. We don't voluntarily get sick. We don't voluntarily shop for healthcare. It's not like any other consumer good. So you are forced into the marketplace, unfortunately, when something happens to you and you're not in a position generally to comparison shop. So having a for-profit model is solely for the benefit of the shareholders. And keep in mind, these corporations not only prefer to make money for their shareholders, they have a responsibility to make money for their shareholders. Their responsibility is not to the American public and to the general health and well-being of the American people.
But Dave raises an larger issue, and that is
and
that
he does it
we,
with an amazing accent.
Right.
Yes.
We are crazy in America. But, I mean, it is true. Are we ever going to get to that concept? You go, why is it that we think if your house is on fire, you have, you call the fire department. If you, someone is about to shoot, you call the police. Like, why is it, you're right, that if we get sick, our society says, you're on your own. Can you pay for that?
Because we've built this tremendous for-profit model, and there's billions and billions and billions of dollars at stake. And so it's very difficult to get rid of those interests. And there's just so much money that you're fighting against between the drug companies and the hospitals and the insurance companies. And I mean, all of the pieces of the medical industrial complex, it's just huge. And you can't wipe that out. I mean, it's just not feasible. But what's interesting, and Richard points this out, is that as we go to these state models, Vermont, for example, is edging towards a single-payer system, and they're hoping to have something like that in place in the state by 2017. So the question becomes, can we on a state level maybe make some progress towards a single-payer model where we don't have a for-profit system in place, and maybe that's a state-by-state thing?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Another spectacular...
cross state lines to get health care.
Well, no. Buying across state lines is not necessarily a good thing. You have to point that out because right now consumer protections are state by state.
Ah, yes.
And so if you buy across state lines, you're then not protected. And these corporations would set up in states like Delaware, like your credit card company does, where they have really weak consumer protections.
Yeah.
That's why Republicans really like the idea of buying across state lines, because it's the benefit of the corporations that have loose corporate restrictions in certain states.
Hmm. Are you implying that Republicans like to favor big corporations in some way?
Corporations are people, my friend.
Yay! Another spectacular healthcare corner. I love you, Jackie Shatner.
I love you back.
Bye. Bye, Jackie. Goodbye.
Corporations are just the right height.
All right. 19 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
She's the life of the Democratic Party. Ignore the lampshade. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
I had no idea Lucy Mantel had a funky booty.
She does. Mm. She has a donkey booty.
Mm.
I played Lucy in the Edinburgh Theater Festival many years ago.
Wasn't that the same theater festival you were in Streetcar Named Desire?
Yes.
Blanche.
Wow. That's like the nurse. You just stole my only line. I'll do it. Blanche, it's time to go.
So you had to wait the entire play.
Yes.
Backstage.
My entrance was longer than my line. My entrance was like, it's a really long entrance in the spotlight. Because it's supposed to be dramatic tension building to Blanche having to go to the loony bin.
Oh, great.
So I built dramatic tension.
Thanks. Spoiler alert.
Sorry. Rosebud is a sled. Oh, for God's sakes. Okay. Jason in Albuquerque, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome.
Hi, guys. I'm hello?
Yes, hello.
Hi, guys.
Hello. Yes, go ahead, Jason.
Sorry, guys.
That's all right.
I'm trying to speak up with Bluetooth. I'm calling to actually argue with you guys, which I very rarely do. I usually call to joke around and make fun of the Republican Party with you.
Yes.
But today I want to pick on you guys for making a big issue out of gun control, which I understand it's topical and everybody's talking about it. But what everybody isn't talking about is the last 30 or 40 years, how we have, as a society, started to slowly accept and condone killing and assassination, and I think that this is pivotal.
Are you prepared? You're doing the drone argument as regards to gun control.
No. It's not even just the drone argument. It's the argument that it's okay for Bush or Obama or this government that we have to publicly condone assassination and killing. We go to war, which is ridiculous. I mean,
Jason, do you not condone, let's say, the assassination of Osama bin Laden? Would that not have been a better result than the entire Afghanistan war and God knows how many people dead, how many innocent civilians, American soldiers, Afghani civilians?
Stephanie, people could make the same argument about killing Lincoln, and what I'm thinking is
killing Lincoln?
Yeah, a lot of people could say, well, if Lincoln had been killed earlier, lots of Americans wouldn't have died, what I'm saying is...
Well, they could make that argument, they would be a dope.
Well, okay, well, my point is that...
Okay, all right, my point is there's no there's no analogy between Osama bin Laden and Lincoln.
No, right.
Okay,
no, I mean, yes,
one of them was... All right,
never
mind. If I need to explain it, you're too dumb to live. Not to him, just in general.
In general, okay.
In general,
gotcha.
You're too dumb to live. If you saw Zero Dark Thirty in Lincoln and thought the same thing,
So a lot of people died in World War II. So was that wrong as well? That
right.
You know, if
you thought Roosevelt both of those guys had it coming, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
There's a gap in your education somewhere. Okay.
You must have been educated in Texas.
I tell you
back
what.
To the fry basket at Whataburger. Okay. Americans worry more about gun violence than losing their jobs. The Kaiser Family Foundation asked adults how much they worry about certain situations, ranging from ability to afford health care to the possibility of being the victim of a terrorist attack. This is interesting.
Yeah.
Poll just out. Americans worry more about being the victim of gun violence than they do about losing a job or being unable to pay their mortgage.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's...
That's eye-opening.
Yeah. And then, in another edition of You're Not Helping, once again, stealing Jackie Schechner's feature. Colorado man arrested last week on suspicion of harassing a lawmaker pushing gun control legislation. Allegedly used menacing language, shall we say, in email. Oh, Giffords has become a verb now. Isn't that nice? She is a black woman legislator who lost her son to gun violence, who's pushing for some gun control measures. An email to State Representative Rhonda Fields. He also mentioned Representative Beth McCann. He said, hopefully someone will Gifford both of your asses
wow.
with a gun.
Oh, my God.
He said, I keep my 30-round magazines. There will be blood. I'm coming for you. Fields, whose son was shot and killed in 2005, is sponsoring two bills that aim to close loopholes in private gun sales and limit high-capacity magazines.
And it's because of guys like that we need gun control.
He repeatedly apologized to one detective for using sexually derogatory word and other racist names in his communications with Fields. He said, I don't use that word when I talk. I'm not a racist.
Ha! Right.
Whatever. What? Okay. I'm sure you are delightful otherwise. All right, 29 minutes after the hour. Talking about Zero Dark 30 with a former interrogator next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
You have to imitate everything you see on
Stephanie Miller.
We're 12, so yes.
True that. 34 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. It's, you know, we're all in the Oscar afterglow out here in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And I was talking about a great piece in the New York Times this past Sunday by Ali Soufan, who's a former interrogator, entitled Torture Lies in Hollywood, because I just saw Zero Dark Thirty last weekend right before the Oscars. I wanted to actually see the whole thing. Mm-hmm. He writes, I watched Zero Dark Thirty not as a former FBI special agent who spent a decade chasing, interrogating, and prosecuting top members of Al-Qaeda, but as someone who enjoys Hollywood movies. As a movie, I enjoyed it. As history, it was bunk. The film opens with the words, based on first-hand accounts of actual events, but the filmmakers immediately pass fiction off as history. When a character named Ammar, for instance, is tortured and afterward it's implied, gives up information that leads to Osama bin Laden, Ammar is a composite character who bears a strong resemblance to a real-life terrorist. In both the film and real life, he was relative of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, bin Laden lieutenant, but the CIA has repeatedly said only three detainees were ever waterboarded. The real Mr. Bellucci was not among them, and he did not give up information that led to bin Laden. In fact, torture led us away from bin Laden. After Mr. Mohammed was waterboarded 183 times, he actually played down the importance of the courier who ultimately led us to bin Laden. So all of those with the important background. Robert McFadden is also a top former interrogator with the Soufan Group. He joins us now. Robert, good morning.
Good morning.
What a great piece Ali wrote in the New York Times about this, and I'm so glad he did it.
Yeah, I think it was a terrific piece, too, but with a little bit of bias on my part, I should say.
A tiny bit. Well, you know, I wanted to see the film because I had, you know, quoted from Catherine Bigelow wrote an editorial for the L.A. Times where she said, I don't personally believe torture led to the capture of bin Laden. But, you know, basically what she was saying, it would have been historically inaccurate to portray that time without including torture. But I agree now, having seen the movie with Ali, do you, that it absolutely gives the impression that torture led to getting bin Laden, don't you think?
I agree completely. Because I saw the movie, actually, upon its the first night opening in New York. And, you know, I thought it was a good movie. It's an entertaining movie. I mean, the last 30 minutes of the movie, if it doesn't get your heart rate up, then nothing will. The scenes of the SEALs and the raid was just fantastic.
Right.
But the opening frame, though, where it talks about based on first-hand accounts and then immediately goes to the scenes with Ammar getting the torture, the enhanced interrogation techniques, as the euphemism goes. So Yeah, I did have a problem with that. And I agree with the op-ed piece, too, that it says that Hollywood is not really compelled to get it right or have any kind of moral compunction. You know, that really should be up to the president, the Congress, the Sissy report that I think we'll probably talk about. But the other part of it, though, Stephanie, too, you know, and granted, the filmmakers in a condensed period of time trying to tell a very, very complicated history of over 10 years, pretty tough to do, but not even a passing reference to the debate about the efficacy of those techniques, and there was a tremendous debate within the community about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, as Ali points out in this piece, numerous investigations, most recently a 6,300-page classified report by the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, have reached the same conclusion. Enhanced interrogation didn't work. Portraying torture as effective risks misleading the next generation of Americans that one of our government's greatest successes came about because of the efficiency of torture. It's a disservice both to our history and our national security. And I think that's the point he's making. This is too important a historical event to get it wrong, right?
Absolutely. And see, that ultimately, what we've been saying, and then with an op-ed piece like this in the New York Times, is to the extent possible, in a secure and righteous way, the report should be declassified and released to the public. Yep. Again, to the extent that it protects sources and methods, there's a tremendous amount of sensitive material still in there. But still, though, from the words of Senator Feinstein, Senator McCain themselves, that it's misleading, and there's no indication that the torture was anything but wasting times and lost leads.
That's right. Well, you know, it's interesting what Ali pointed out, that John Brennan, you know, former CIA official, now President Obama's nominee, recently testified the classified report raised serious questions about information he received when he was the agency's director. He said publicly what many of us who were in interrogation rooms when the program was devised have been warning about for years. Senior officials right up to the president were misled about the enhanced interrogation program. And obviously that was passed on to these filmmakers, right?
Right. Well, see, that's another really two terrific points there. One, I mean, it was good to hear Mr. Brennan say that. If you've been in government long enough, you see this over and over again, and almost always it's never with ill intent. But you get into this phenomenon where seniors are overbriefed, and that's one way to put it. I mean, there's this kind of internal pressure to put the best look, the best face on a program, in this case the EIT. So someone like a Brennan, up through the former president, vice president, were probably a lot of times over-briefed on the results of these kind of things, particularly if you have seniors within an organization or proponents of that program.
Well, you know, and again, Ali makes some good points in this. He said some of these memos and reports pointing out their inaccuracies have been declassified, but they're also heavily redacted. And he talks about books on the subject, including his own. It's the same thing. And they say, meanwhile, promoters of torture get to hoodwink journalists, authors, and Hollywood producers while selectively declassifying material and providing false information that fits their narrative. So, and so you say the creators of Zero Dark Thirty attempted to document the greatest global manhunt of our generation, but they did so without acknowledging that their history, quote-unquote, was based on dubious sources. And I think that goes to your point and Ali's point that this stuff really ought to be declassified. Right.
Right. Right. And that's exactly the other point you raised there, Stephanie, is the idea of, okay, they had access to individuals who were aware of the program. And so by having that kind of perspective, then they're controlling the narrative, and thus it comes out that way on the film. And it's inaccurate and misleading.
Ali writes, yet the Senate report remains classified, and only those with security clearances like Mr. Brennan can read how the public was misled. It's the duty of the President and Congress to responsibly declassify the report and the other documents that advocates of torture don't want released. That's the only way to ensure that future generations won't ever go down that dark and dangerous path again. And that's exactly what Dick Cheney doesn't want, right? Us to know the whole truth.
Yeah, in fact, I wish I had written that piece exactly that way.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it was interesting, and I thought, I don't want to express an opinion without having seen the film, and that's why I saw it last weekend. And you know, I have to say, you're absolutely right. It is a great movie, and a lot of it. But again, you can't take something that historical. And can you imagine if they got everything in Lincoln almost wrong?
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. And see, that's the thing. I mean, I mentioned before, and I believe Ali did in this piece, that it's really not Hollywood's responsibility. But nonetheless, though, that we as former practitioners and still in an advisory capacity involved in our post-government working life, We have concerns that this will become, you know, the let's say the definitive history of how bin Laden was captured, and that was the close on that era of terrorism, which again it's inaccurate, and we're talking about two important things when it comes to this: efficacy, and then the huge thing we haven't even mentioned yet, morality.
Yeah,
and the
and,
bad
you know,
things it did to the U.S.
Right, and Ali, I share Ali's hope. What he writes in here, he said once it's declassified, he said it won't be long before another Hollywood movie comes along to tell the real story of how America killed Bin Laden. And I look forward to that too. Don't you?
I do. Yes, I do.
Yeah, because I you know it's interesting. I went to the movie with a good friend of mine, a guy who's very liberal, and we're talking afterwards, and he's like, yeah, you know that kind of thing you say behind closed doors, like, yeah, you know. Sometimes I think you got to do, you know, sometimes torture does work or whatever. And I sent him this piece and he's like, okay, you're right. I was wrong.
Yeah.
But you're right. That's the visceral thing that you and Ali are both saying the movie creates. Sometimes you got to, you know, do bad, you know, behind closed doors, you got to do. And the point of this whole piece is no, you don't. And it doesn't work.
Well, yeah, especially if you talk about the sequence, the way the film started with the based on first-hand accounts, then goes to that very, very emotional actual recordings of victims, you know, pleading for help. And then the very next scene, after you feel that emotionally, is Amar undergoing the treatment, which, by the way, it didn't happen that way anyway.
Right.
With the composite character who likely was Amar al-Baluchi.
Right. It is. It's exploiting that feeling we had right after 9/11 to go, you know, and you're absolutely right. The issue is morality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if you're a pretty normal human being after, you know, the opening scene like that, and then the recordings, is very emotional recordings, I mean, most people would say, yeah, they deserve that. But see, that has nothing to do with getting information efficiently, quickly, and then using it in an actionable way.
Yep, absolutely. Robert, thank you so much for coming on with us. I was, you know, dying to talk about this, and I know Ali is traveling, and I know that you know you have so many of the same experiences, and we just appreciate it. Just a great discussion to have right on Oscar week. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
All right, there goes Robert McFadden from Sufan Group.
I love that scene in Lincoln where Lincoln called in an airstrike with F-16s.
Sure.
Right, that was awesome.
Yeah. Historically accurate. And
cool. And it ended the Civil War.
That was awesome, right, and then George Washington shot him. What? Okay. Can you imagine if they got a lot of key stuff wrong in Lincoln? You'd be like, wait. I mean,
wait a minute. That didn't.
Wait a minute.
Lincoln didn't have any nuclear submarines.
No.
The Civil War would still be going on if Lincoln didn't call in that submarine.
Although there were submarines
there
in
were
Civil
submarines.
War.
Yes.
Yes, there were.
Hand cranked submarines.
Exactly.
Donna in California. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Donna.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I love you guys.
I love you.
You make my day. I wanted to call about California and folks that have pre-existing conditions, medical conditions, and have been shut out of the health care market.
Uh-huh.
There is a policy now that they can get. Our insurance agents called me the day after the Supreme Court ruled on the Affordable Care Act and said, I have great news. You can get a policy now. It's the pre-existing condition insurance plan, and people can Google it, PCIP, on their internet and find out. I went 6 years without insurance, and my arthritis went to osteoporosis, and I'm pretty screwed up now. But I have insurance again, and I'm so excited about
That's...
And I just want to let people know there's a lot of people that aren't insured. And right now there's only about a little over 1,500 of us enrolled in this plan, and we need more people enrolled to make it work.
Well, good.
The premium is $492 a month, which is not really that much. The previous program California had was called a Mr. MIP, Major Risk Medical Insurance Plan. The premium on that was $1,200 a month.
Oh, wow.
$2,500 deductible and a lifetime cap of $85,000.
Well, so Donna, thank you for that. We have to break here, but thank you so much for that. That's great information to have, and people can Google it. All right, on their internet, as she says.
Exactly.
Yes.
Schaaf, well, I would like to say that Lincoln didn't have drones, but Mary Todd Lincoln was known to drone on a lot.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. The same thing. Thank you for that historical.
Yes.
Thank you for setting historical records straight, Schaaf. Are we not taking our history seriously? 46
Run!
Minutes.
Lincoln was a well-known vampire killer.
Like, I need that like I need a hole in the head.
That lady's bipolar. Run!
Blah, blah, blah. 46. we're doing like 16 different skits at once. All right, 46 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ex-Catholic girls gone wild. Her grade school nuns would like to slap her silly. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Don't suggest this. Come on. No.
51 minutes after the hour, 1-800. I'm not going to play I Will Always Love You with Goats again. All right, top of the 8. Okay.
No.
Pacific time. Okay. This hour brought to you by GoToMyPC.com. Access your entire work computer from your smartphone or tablet like I do with GoToMyPC mobile apps. GoToMyPC, you can try it free for 45 days for my special offer. GoToMyPC.com. Click on the try it free button after the promo code Stephanie. All right. Lots of people loved our interview with setting the record straight on history.
Yes.
On Zero Dark 30. We had an actual interrogator. I made the point, can you imagine if they got all the facts in Lincoln wrong? Torture did not lead to us getting bin Laden. Period. So I'm just saying, at least as long as the kids remember the history of Mitt Romney correctly.
History tells us that Willard Mitt Romney ran for president in 2012. But history doesn't tell the whole story.
Vampires are not people, my friend. I'm here to turn the living dead into a living nightmare.
Mitt Romney, vampire hunter.
For taking off your head, this axe is just the right height, my friend.
He ran for president for 67 years.
None of these vampires have any experience running a business.
Mitt Romney, vampire hunter. Mediocrity shall not perish from the earth.
Wow.
Yay.
Thanks, Rocky Mountain Mike.
All right. Playing the hits, everybody.
That's right.
Doris in Michigan, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Doris.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
The first time I heard you on the radio, you'd broken your foot or something. So that's however far back that goes.
Wow. Yeah, that was quite a while ago. All right. Go ahead.
Yeah. I was calling. I'm a physician, and I have a perspective. There's a couple examples, but if I can get the first one anyway.
Okay.
If one were to look at, talk about universal health care, and people talk about socialism and Marx and all that stuff, although we all have socialism, and they don't know that, especially the corporations. But if we took, my brother was a Marine in Vietnam, okay, so he qualifies to go to the VA.
Right.
And I'm glad he came back.
Which is swimming in socialism.
Yes, 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 and it's wonderful. And Mr. Potter, I think, wrote a book on the best care anywhere on the VA. But one of the things, all the money of our public money, my tax money, your tax money, goes to the VA and the help of our veterans, which I wanted all to go for that, and they have a low overhead, like 2-3%, which all do have, but it all goes for the veterans. If you were to argue the way from the other side, you'd say, you know what, I'd like to take 30% of what we give of our public money and give it to a corporate guy who has a jet and maybe a golf membership and gets $200 million a year, and then that's two-thirds left for my brother and everybody else's brother or sister. How about that? What do you think about that?
Yeah.
I don't know. Too many people would say, yeah, let's cut a third of that and just throw it over there for somebody wants to make money.
Yeah.
I don't think that I think they would see it in a little different way.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we say it all the time that, you know, a for-profit health industry it makes no sense. I think it is immoral, as our caller said. Our British caller, who said he's a Pole, who's an American. What are we doing here?
Well, he is an American. He was born in New York, but he was raised in Britain, he said.
He has one of those fake British accents like Madonna.
Well, I think it was fake.
Who is from Detroit? All right. Okay. Did I say 350 economists now say sequester cuts will increase the deficit? Oh, the dopiest dopes in Dilferson. These Republicans. How many economists does it take to make the Congress and the media pay attention? Paul Krugman has been warning of the dangers of austerity forever. Will they pay attention to 350 economists? The prominent ones, in fact. who have issued an important statement warning that the fragile recovery is threatened by obsessive concern with cutting deficits that has infected both parties. The economists from universities and research groups across the U.S. reminding politicians the U.S. economy is still marked by mass unemployment, rising poverty, and declining wages, and they're warning that big spending cuts aimed at reducing deficits could throw the economy back into the recession and therefore making the deficit worse.
And then we can blame it on the president.
Exactly.
That's the way we do things.
This is one thing we've been talking about a lot. Who wrote this? TPM, Talking Points Memo. The establishment's Obama derangement syndrome. That's what's irritating is they have that irritating. They have to make both sides seem equal in every debate. Bob Woodward, again, on MSNBC, they write, on Wednesday morning arguing Obama's decision to not seize imperial powers but instead to follow the letter of the sequestration law amounts to a kind of madness. Can you imagine Ronald Reagan sitting there and saying, oh, by the way, I can't do this because of some budget document? The obscure budget document that Woodward is referring to is a duly enacted law passed by Congress, signed by the president. The only ways around it, as the president has said, is for Congress to change it or for Obama to break it. What they're saying is if Obama decided to ignore that and just spend money as if the law didn't exist, imagine the howls of outrage we'd hear from Woodward. That would be entirely justified.
That's right.
They keep trying to give him powers he doesn't have. Which is it? He's like we keep saying, oh, why won't the president lead? Why won't the president get out of the way? Why won't you shut up? That's what I want to know. Okay, Right Wing World we played before. Now the latest thing is the president's letting brown people out to kill you.
Yeah, Fox News just
Republicans
went
right.
Dump
Speaker
over
Boehner on down, accusing the White House of threatening the public safety by freeing hundreds of dangerous criminals. Detained by immigration.
Then they're bringing in Mitt Romney, Vampire Hunter.
Right. Immigration and Customs Enforcement is pushing back, saying it is endangering American lives by releasing a criminal detainee, saying it took steps to avoid releasing anyone who would pose a threat. They said the detainees who have been released can be characterized as non-criminals and other low-risk offenders who do not have serious criminal histories that would subject them to mandatory detention. Detainees with serious criminal histories are a detention priority and have not been released. As Congresswoman Sanchez told us, they have, ankle bracelets, and they are the immigration proceedings against them will continue.
Yeah.
So it's just more fear-mongering dreck from right-wing world.
Well. Do we get
what
anything?
They do.
Yeah, do we get anything else from right wing world?
No.
That's that bag, baby.
President Obama's team concedes the almost certain arrival of the across the board cuts Friday. That's tomorrow, by the way.
Yep.
Will not immediately produce the dramatic layoffs and airport delays that they've been warning about, but this is what we talked about, and Charlie Pierce talked about the drip, drip, drip of bad news that's going to slowly emerge in congressional districts. Hopefully, will put Republicans on the defensive and get something done here. We will talk more about that and much more as we continue 58 minutes after the hour. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Mints.
No.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Yeah, it is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. We don't have forgotten to mention all morning. The big party.
Hey, Chicago, you say twice isn't enough?
15 is my limit.
The Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour is returning to the Chicago Theater on April 13th.
With filthy mouths and bad attitudes.
Tickets are available at Ticketmaster.com. Come see the tour that sparked the number one comedy album and its own TV documentary.
Who can argue with that?
The Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour at the Chicago Theater on April 13th. Sweet Home Chicago is about to get a little more sugar from Mama.
Yay! Thank you. Get it. Hurry. Go. The marquee is up. Somebody sent me the marquee at the Chicago Theater. Tickets flying out the window. So hurry. Get those tickets. Guess what? Somebody else sat on the remote and found us by accident on current television. Charlie in Kansas City. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Charlie.
Hi. I didn't find you on current TV. I found you on the satellite radio.
Oh, okay. By accident?
But anyway, I was just surfing that, and you was making fun of Mitt Romney.
Right.
What has Obama done? But he hasn't done anything.
Oh, boy.
Okay, which is it? Has he done too much and he's a socialist, or has he not done anything?
I'm not going to say he's a socialist. I mean, I don't know the guy. Well, I know I don't know him. But
right.
He was a community activist.
And he never ran a business.
Charlie, are you stuck back in the last election cycle?
He was also a state senator and a federal senator.
How long was he a senator?
But what? Okay, you're running the last election before the first time he was elected. What do you mean? What is he? He's done a lot of things. He's gotten health care done. He's pardon me.
Health care. It's the cost of it is enormous.
No, it's
not. Our country cannot afford
it. So is the cost of our health care system. We're going to bring the prices down.
It's not. No, it ain't. It's not the government's responsibility to give us health care.
Life, liberty, and
this is not. This is not government health care.
It's privately run health care.
Oh, don't give me that. It's
yes, it
no,
is.
It's,
no, they're run by private companies, dude.
This is not a public. A single payer would have been a public government system.
Like
this is not a government system at
in
all.
Every country
Chicago,
in Europe.
And they're talking about all the gun stuff right now. There's more crime in
and
Chicago.
He's
change the subject when you're losing the argument.
You know?
That's
right.
Typical.
Because there are very lax gun
because
laws everywhere around, right around Chicago. So it is very easy to get
because
a gun
they
anywhere
don't have
near Chicago.
National gun laws, federal gun laws that apply to every state. So you can get all kinds of guns in Gary, Indiana, and just drive right across the border.
But Obama has not did a dang thing to help this country.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Oh, Charlie, you're the cutest thing ever. He's like a little broken record from 2008. What's he done? He's a community activator.
He's a community activator. And
he ain't done nothing.
He has not done nothing.
He was totes adorbs.
he
was like a little relic. He was like a tchotchke from the 2008 election.
Oh, that's hilarious.
He had a hip-hop barbecue.
He's doing too much.
That was
not
like
enough.
Early Obama derangement syndrome.
He's doing nothing but too much of it.
He's like a pre-Skeeter. He's not even Skeeter from this Obama derangement syndrome.
Healthcare? Who needs healthcare?
Okay. Government system. What, are you looking for Obama derangement syndrome?
He ain't never run no business.
We gotta put him in the next version of this. Here we go.
Kenyan socialist Muslim.
Meet Skeeter.
He raised taxes 14 times.
As you can tell, Skeeter is afflicted with Obama derangement syndrome. Skeeter is unable to distinguish wild fantasy from reality. There is no cure, but there is hope.
He's arrogant.
For less than the price of 2 decaf triple lattes, you can sponsor someone with Obama derangement syndrome.
All he does is blame Bush for everything Bush did.
With your help, Skeeter and thousands like him can receive the equivalent of an 8th grade education.
Death panel.
Learning basic civics, economics, science.
He had a big hip-hop barbecue.
And hygiene.
Community organizer, communist Hitler.
We might not be able to cure him.
They're not rich people, they're job creators.
But we might prevent Skeeter from running for a second congressional term.
Obama's in cahoots with Barbara Streisand and Al Gore, who has a big house.
Please help us erase Obama derangement syndrome.
Madrasa.
A half-baked thought is a terrible thing to waste.
He ain't did nothing.
See, and now, magically, by now, we actually agree. I agree Al Gore's got too big a house. All right. Because that's a joke. It's a little inside joke. I'm just kidding. Oh, my goodness.
Inside baseball.
All right.
We're still employed, you know.
Right. I'm very... I'm really losing it. Well, we were discussing during the break my drinking solution that has veered into a problem. Well, Jim came in and said, I shouldn't drink vodka. It makes me angry. I think I broke a table.
You think you broke a table?
Well,
was there damage this morning when you got up?
Yes, there was like a little side table that the top was off of it. That's not connected to the legs of the thing anymore.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
It could be a cat jumped on it.
I'm
going
to go with that.
You have five of them.
Maybe vodka
makes
your
four. Okay.
Maybe vodka makes your cats angry. Maybe they were dipping into it.
They've been dipping into my vodka.
Which makes you even angrier. Well, we were talking about it. I'm like, I don't think I can go cold turkey. No offense. I can't get all programmy. It's too. So I'm on a reduction program. It's going very well, please and thank you.
Well, it's been one day.
Yeah. Shush! I'm under a lot of strain! Okay. But anyway, I was saying because some addictions, they take time to break. For instance, Screaming Goat parodies. Mm-hmm. Screaming Goat song, there's a lot of... What does it start with? Oh, Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
And then once you go down the screaming goat, it has already jumped the shark. And you think, okay, I'm done with that meme.
Jumped the goat.
I'm done with that internet meme, right? We played Bon Jovi. We played who else yesterday? Taylor Dane. People have sent us screaming goats in
every... Someone sent me goat-yay.
Go DA.
See?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. But I'm going to play it.
Hal was here yesterday. Somebody put it in Zero Dark Thirty's song.
Zero One.
Right, I'm sorry. That was the movie. Hal's does not have a terrorist
You're
band.
You're drunk.
I am not. That is the problem, is I'm not this morning. It's very different. I'm not used to operating like this. All right, but what I'm saying is just one more. One more Screaming Goat parody, and that's it, because it's Whitney.
And
it's funny because it's the sound of my love life. Okay, 1-800-212-2. Ryan in Pennsylvania. Hi, Ryan. Welcome.
Hi, Stephan and Mooks. I watch the show every day. And I actually have a larger point to make about the gun violence in America. But first, I did want to touch on something that an earlier caller had said. You had asked him, would killing Bin Laden earlier have saved American lives? And he had replied back, you could say the same thing about killing Lincoln.
Right. And someone had only killed Lincoln earlier. How good would have been.
I actually think that he had not a point that killing Lincoln would have been good, but he had a point in responding to your question, and then you kind of disconnected and then made a straw man argument out of what he said. Like, kind of.
It's my first morning of sobriety. Just go easy on me, would you please, for Christ's sake. I am completely sober.
What I was going to say about that gun violence here in America, I think that a lot of times, people are arguing about what needs to be done, and the argument comes up a lot about video games or movies, a culture of violence, and I actually think it's more of the reality of violence. I think that the generation of people that grew up now, the teenagers, the ones going to war, they've grown up around us being in a perpetual war, to where it's okay to kill people in Afghanistan, to where it's okay to kill people in Iraq, it's okay to kill people in Pakistan, Yemen, you know.
But I don't think people think it is okay. Many, many people were against the Iraq war, and
oh yeah, I definitely was.
Yeah, and my point was, you know, had we killed Bin Laden the way we did, you know, we might not have had to have the Afghanistan war. I mean, I don't think people are for killing civilians of any kind. Civilians were killed in the killing of Bin Laden, right?
Right.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I'm sorry. In the house, right? Yeah. People in the house.
Yeah. Well.
But if you're hanging out with Bin Laden, sorry.
Right.
Your choices are worse than mine. Okay. And they were sober, apparently.
Apparently.
I have not made many of my choices sober. Pat in L.A., you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome.
Yeah. Hi, Steph. Longtime listener.
Thank you. Go ahead.
I listened to you years ago. I just have to mention this thing. When you're on another channel, and some person was saying that you knew nothing about Republicans, and you said, "Yeah, but your father had run for vice president on a Republican ticket."
Right.
And I thought that was like a Woody Allen moment. I love that so much. That's when I became a fan.
Thank you.
Anyway, about the movie, I think you're missing a big point. I mean, you know, clearly the character that got waterboarded was a compilation of many different people. I mean, it's a two-hour movie. The actual events took place over 10 years.
Right.
You can't show everything, right? You've all acknowledged that.
Right, but so, waterboarding actually led us away from Bin Laden. We waterboarded Khalid Sheikh Mohammed 183 times. He steered us away from the courier that eventually led us to... So that's a pretty key fact that's wrong.
But it didn't show that waterboarding actually led to the key.
It strongly implied it.
I think if they had not shown waterboarding, it would have been just a disservice. You know, because waterboarding was part of the story.
You can include it. You're right. It was part of what was going on at that time, Pat. But if you were going to be accurate, you would have included it as something that was not helpful in us getting Bin Laden. It clearly implied that it was.
But this was a character that was representing the whole,
But he was a character a real character that was not waterboarded.
They're not saying it was a real character. They're saying it was a compilation of characters.
Yes, but he was based on a real character.
Several real characters. You know, but there's one thing that I think you missed, and that, you know, you remember the monkeys in the cage? The guy, the actual torturer, he would play with these monkeys in the cage, and then later on the monkeys were gone, and he said, "Well, I'm going back to Washington now. My work here is done. They've taken my monkeys away." They were referring to the fact that he no longer could torture. That was something that was taken away from them, and it wasn't until well after that that they got the information. So I think the movie, you know, in the idea of what happened is being accurate.
Well, I strongly disagree, but it is my first moment.
Okay.
It is my first morning of being sober, so I apologize. Maybe I'm, you know what I need, Jim? I need a lot of drinks to kill the bug that's up my ass. Okay. 18 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
For a good time, call now. 1-800-STEP-1-2. Stephanie Miller. Stephanie Miller.
Screaming go. 22 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-1-2. The phone number. Toll free from anywhere. Tomorrow, Fridays, with sexy liberal John Fugelsang.
Indeed.
Yeah. August, what is it? Oh, no, wait. What am I saying? April 13th, Chicago Theater, sexy liberal. Get it. Go. Get it.
And you know who we have on Tuesday?
Who?
The return of our best friend ever, Kathleen Madigan, in studio.
Oh, speaking of Midwestern goodness.
Oh, that's Tuesday.
Little comedy confection.
I love her.
She's too rich comedy-wise for all the time, but she's when we get her, she's a fluffy, like, comedic dessert topping.
Yes.
I invite her to like every zillion party. I have a zillion parties at my house, and I always get the most hilarious email response ever. It's always no, because
right.
I'm in wherever.
Because she's traveling. She works on the weekends.
I'm at the Chuckle Hut or wherever, and then she'll say something hilarious.
Can you share?
No, I don't remember the last one.
Oh.
Who can remember all her hilarity? It's too much.
Okay.
It's too much. Okay, so we've been talking about the cuts. Janet Napolitano, a Homeland Security director, says it will be like a rolling ball. It will just keep growing, meaning the ill effects. Won't that be fun? Thanks for the avalanche, Republicans. White House officials said Mr. Obama had invited the congressional leadership to a meeting on Friday after the cuts have gone into effect, a stark indication the administration does not expect any progress before then. The boner said the White House is playing games with the American people, trying to scare the American people. This is not leadership. Strategists for the boner believe that Republicans have been successful in branding the automatic cuts as Mr. Obama's idea.
No. Computer says
no. Computer says not really. By the by, we have a new defense secretary, thanks to the Republicans' help once again.
Mm-hmm.
Chuck Hagel yesterday.
Budget. Sequestration. I don't need to dwell on all the good news there. That's a reality. We need to figure this out.
He also talked about, defense.
We can't dictate to the world, but we must engage in the world. We must lead with our allies.
By the way, can I have some game show music, please? The Republican Party's family feud exposed by Chris Eliza. Did you see this?
Yeah.
He said the Republicans need a Richard Dawson figure. The sexy headline out of the Pew Research Center poll, more than 6 in 10, that's almost 60%, Jim.
Yeah, very nearly.
View the Republican Party as out of touch with the American people, while a majority, 52%, believe the party is too extreme. The poll exposes the bigger problem for the GOP. The party is deeply divided, fractured, with many people who describe themselves Republicans holding decidedly negative views about their side. Why are you hitting yourselves? Why are you hitting yourselves? Stop it. Question for... Did your brothers do that to you? Mine did. Just, the, you know, taking your own hand and stop it. Why are you hitting yourself? Why are you...
I had a sister. I think Roman Gomez did that to me.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That would be before he, pinned me down and he dripped toothpaste into my face and then sucked it back up again right before it hit.
Mm.
That was like the early form of waterboarding, but with toothpaste. Mm. Crest.
Crest?
Right.
Okay. Crest boarding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The question for Republicans is whether this family feud is the sort of thing all parties of out of power, or at least out of the White House, go through, or whether there is something different and more dangerous happening here. I think so. Wigs! Wigs! Okay.
A girl can dream.
Yeah, the wigs. All right, Don in Arizona, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Don.
Yeah, good morning, little sis.
Pardon me?
I love you guys.
Thank you.
I live in Arizona. It's kind of weird out here. I grew up in Colorado and moved here. I actually moved here because I really liked John McCain when he was anti-Bush. And I thought, man, this guy.
You moved to Arizona because you liked one of their senators?
Yeah, when McCain used to go head-to-head against Bush's policies all the time, I thought.
That's really
like
a reason to pick
guy.
Up
he
and move interstate?
It's okay.
Right.
Well, I lost my job.
Okay.
And I came out here because a friend of mine moved out here about 30 years ago. And he opened up a shop down in Bullhead. Mm-hmm. And it's right across the river from Laughlin.
Right.
And then when I got here, he died. His wife sold the business, and I've been kind of stranded ever since.
Oh, dear.
I bought a house that I can't sell.
But you'll always have acres. You'll always have Bullhead.
Oh, yeah.
You got out of that just in time.
I dragged him down to my level of maturity. Yeah. Eddie in Tennessee, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Eddie.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Good.
Liberal caller from Tennessee. That's kind of unusual.
Actually, we've been getting quite a few since we've been on Current TV.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, here's the deal. I'll make it short and sweet. I was watching one of the shows. I can't tell anymore whether conservative or liberal, but they were talking about the Second Amendment. You know, people go back and say, we should abolish the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment gives the right, you know, to carry firearms. And it was this British guy talking. British, English, you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying, we have the lowest gun problems in the whole world. We have the lowest homicide rate.
Eddie, are you drunk by any chance?
No.
You're not. Okay.
I'm just bad imitation, right?
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
I see. Okay. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Right. And the other guy said, okay, coming across the other way, said, the reason we had the Second Amendment was because of you, talk to the British guy. If the British let us be, okay,
right.
And let us do our thing.
Yeah, all right, Eddie,
we
sorry,
would
we're,
never
yeah, we're out of time. Okay, yeah, as much as I would like to hear your impressions of a conversation on another radio show between some British guy and
whatever.
Some other guy. While you've been drinking moonshine, I think I'll take a short pause here.
Yikes.
All right.
Yeah, we're up against a hard break.
We're up against a hard
break. As far as you know,
break.
We're up against a hard break. Okay, 29.
Only this time we actually really are.
Yeah. All right, now we are.
Yeah.
Now we filled the time.
Yeah.
And now we are. Okay. 29 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show. We'll have to leave it there.
God, that's
Stephanie Miller.
It's like meeting Mickey Mouse and Walt Disney at the same time.
Wow.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show, 34 minutes after the hour.
Oh, only 2.5 hours until Ex Benedict.
Yep.
Hey, it's a play on words.
Whee! Okay, then. Oh. All right. Oh, and don't forget, everybody, it is the farewell lunch for the Pope is at the Vatican Olive Garden at 11:30.
Yeah, a place to get authentic
Italian
food.
Quality ethnic food.
Crowded. Going to be crowded. All right. And the new Pope will be named New Pope, and this Pope will take the title Pope Classic.
Yeah, I prefer Pope Zero.
Hey!
Yo! Oh, God.
Oh, we can't get enough of the Pope from here. Oh, my God!
He's too pooped to pope.
Whoa, no! How's that poopy changey thing going for you?
You know we're going to get cards and letters from Catholics.
Okay. Jerry in Detroit, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Jerry.
All right. Greetings from Motown. And hello. In the immortal words of the Four Tops, Detroit is reaching out. Will you be there?
We are here. We are here, Detroit. Go ahead.
I wanted to bring up the issue of the fight over the renewing the Voting Rights Act.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And what Justice Scalia said, calling it racial entitlement.
He called it, let's sure people heard that. He called it, a perpetuation of racial entitlement, the Voting Rights Act. Go ahead.
Yeah, I heard that. Because when I heard that, and speaking as a black man, white people since the beginning of this country especially conservative whites, have had racial entitlement for 400 years here.
Thank you, exactly.
For justice, to make a call about that. And then on top of that, you had the lead justice on John Roberts claiming that there's more voter disenfranchisement in Massachusetts than in Mississippi.
What? No. I think I speak for all hard of hearing Darth Vaders when I say what?
What? What?
Exactly. Yes, there were, he refers to the story, there were audible gasps in the Supreme Court's lawyer's lounge where audio of the oral argument is pumped in for members of the Supreme Court bar when Justice Scalia offered his assessment of the key provision in the Voting Rights Act, calling it a perpetuation of racial entitlement. That was a gasp. The comment came as part of a larger riff on a comment Scalia made the last time.
You didn't know we had that.
Get that ready for, you know, okay. Doma and Prop 8, because you know he's going to say something incredibly homophobic.
It's the best gasp I think I've heard. I love that.
It's the perpetuation of homo entitlement. The comment came as part of a larger riff on a comment Scalia made the last time the voting rights law was before the justices, noting the Voting Rights Act reauthorization passed 98-0 mm-hmm. when it was before the Senate in 2006. Scalia claimed 4 years ago this vote actually undermines the law, the unopposed vote. He said the Israeli Supreme Court used to have a rule that if the death penalty was pronounced unanimously, it was invalid because there must be something wrong there.
Why are we quoting Israeli law?
Right. His comments suggested this occurred not because of a growing national consensus that racial disenfranchisement is unacceptable, because lawmakers are too afraid to be tarred as racist. There he is wading into politics again, right?
Why is he quoting Israeli law? That's like quoting Sharia law. It's just something you really shouldn't do.
Exactly.
You know, it's the law of another country. We are not Israel. We are America. We have our own laws.
Right.
I don't... Okay. That.
Get the gasps ready. Get the and murmurs.
Rutabaga, Rutabaga.
Did he just use the F word for gay man? You can't. Okay. By the way, David Frum writes a piece, "Why I Signed the Republican Brief Supporting Gay Marriage." Dozens of prominent Republicans, including David Frum, have signed. Signed a brief in support of gay marriage. Same-sex rights have finally jumped a generational divide, he writes. He said this is no longer an issue only for the under-40 generation. Same-sex marriage rights can now show support everywhere in the party, including its highest office holders. He makes a good point. He was talking about just his evolution mm-hmm. personally on the issue. He said, as a conservative concern with stabilizing families to rely less on government aid, he was always saying it's, he's talking about from the economic point of view, I've been convinced I've been worrying about the wrong thing. Stopping same-sex marriage is nothing to support families battered by economic adversity. Instead, it excludes and punishes people who seek only to live as conservatives would urge them to live. Treating same-sex partnerships differently from husband-wife marriages only serves to divide and antagonize those who ought to be working together. Like many signatories of the amicus brief, my thinking has been influenced by the fine example of the many committed, devoted same-sex couples I know. See? Biggest predicator is that you know somebody. You love somebody that is, you know, as Scalia would say, a limp-wristed... Okay, at least...
A limp-wristed homo.
Right.
Yeah. All right.
At least as much, however, I have been swayed by Nintendo.
That's going the way of the goats.
Yeah. The harm culture war politics has done to my own party. Anyway, there you go. Thank you, David Frum. All right. I don't know. Nothing more to say. I just wanted to hear that again.
Yeah.
Okay. Brett in Virginia, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hello, Brett.
Hey, how's it going, Steph?
Good.
A long-time listener. Love you guys to death.
Thank
you. I just got two things I wanted to touch on. You know, first with the Bin Laden and torture link thing that Republicans like to breathe to death about. If that were so true, then why did the Bush-Cheney administration have to close down the CIA Bin Laden unit back in 2006?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know,
there you go.
Never really get anybody asking that question. And on about the
Do you think that impeded the search for Bin Laden at all, closing down the Bin Laden unit at the CIA?
I don't see how that could be a problem.
I don't see how there was any connection there.
No. A connection.
Connection. All right. By the way, we've been talking about guns off and on all morning. Vice President Joe Biden yesterday.
The excuse that is too politically risky to act is no longer acceptable.
Yeah. If anybody saw the Sandy Hook father on TV last night with a picture of me and his son crying and talking about the assault weapons ban, I just... Again, it's like marriage equality, not a partisan issue anymore to me. Senator Lindsey Graham, well-known Southern Belle.
Isn't it really about who has the gun, sometimes more than the gun itself?
That's part of it, yes.
Right,
but
right.
If you have a huge magazine so you can keep firing and firing and firing and no one can stop you, that's a problem.
Yes. Senator Graham and Milwaukee Police Chief Edward Flynn.
How many cases?
No, wait, it doesn't matter. It's a paper thing. Well, I want to stop 76. I want to finish the answer.
Well, no,
I want to stop 76,000 people from buying guns illegally. That's what a background check does. If you think we're going to do paperwork prosecutions, you're wrong.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yay.
I want to move to Milwaukee now.
That must have given Lindsey the vapors.
The vapors.
Oh,
stars.
He must have clutched the pearls continuously.
I'll be on my fainting couch.
Wow.
Not enough mint juleps in the world.
He was having mint juleps with John McCain. Wow. Ah. Did you see how that man spoke to me? Why, never. I will be on the fainting couch forever.
Oh, God.
Oh. Okay.
Really?
At least I have Tara. Okay.
We're going to be hearing from the senator's office pretty soon.
I declare. Are you going to let that man speak to me that way?
I swear, I shall never go hungry again.
You are.
Opie! What?
Well,
I made pie!
She's from Carolinas, so is Lindsey Graham. So, do you have something to base it on?
That man spoke to me!
Surprise!
It's my new impression. It's Lindsey Graham as Aunt B. Andy, open. All right. How awesome is Elizabeth Warren?
I love her.
Oh my God! We were talking to Gavin Newsom about her yesterday. How awesome she was with the she did the Harvard professor glasses in the last hearing.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Tell me again one more time. How many cases have you brought to trial? Bernanke, Hamana Hamana. Did you see that?
I did.
Look at the time. I've got the thing with the guy.
Why big banks are not her biggest fans. Grilling Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke about the risks and fairness of having big banks that are too big to fail. Here is some of that.
I understand that we're all trying to get to the end of too big to fail. Mm-hmm. But my question, Mr. Chairman, is until we do, should those biggest financial institutions be repaying the American taxpayer that $83 billion subsidy that they're getting? It is working like an insurance policy. Ordinary folks pay for homeowners insurance. Ordinary folks pay for car insurance. And these big financial institutions are getting cheaper borrowing to the tune of $83 billion in a single year, simply because people believe that the government would step in and bail them out. And I'm just saying, if they're getting it, why shouldn't they pay for it?
I think we should get rid of it.
When repeatedly pressed by Warren, Bernanke's confidence seemed to waver. When pressed by Warren later in the hearing, the Bernanke suggested the government's tools to wind down a big bank that is failing were still a work in progress. He said some of the rules take time to develop. The orderly liquidation authority, I think we've made some progress on that. We've got the living wills. I think we're moving in the right direction. We have a plan that's moving in the right direction. She said, any idea when we're going to arrive at the right direction?
Ooh.
Oh, Jack Hughes! Bam! Nothing but net!
Okay. Mic drop!
He said, mic drop. She did a mic drop and she walked off. Gangsta mic drop.
Uh-huh.
He said, it's not a 0-1 kind of thing, Bernanke stammered in response.
0-1?
0-1. He's talking about right. Hal's band?
Right. Over time, we will see increasing...
No, he's a fan.
Increasing market expectations that these institutions can fail. All right. Rock on, Elizabeth Warren.
I have to go potty.
Sounds like John Boehner doing the Cowardly Lion when Eric Cantor steps on.
Yes.
Steps on his tail.
Oh.
Don't step on my tail.
I got no courage. I can't step on my tail.
I were king of the House of Representatives.
Okay.
Okay, now you just did Charles Nelson
that
Reilly.
That went into Charles Nelson Reilly.
No, he gets that, you know.
Oh.
Right.
Never mind.
And Lindsey Graham said, I've got pie, Hoover. 45 minutes after the hour.
Oh, my God, what is wrong with you?
I'm going to go make a key lime pie. Ooh,
this stopping drinking might
be a bad idea. Yeah, I think you might need to go back to drinking.
Wow-y.
Yes. Drink a lot. Drink lots.
Where's the mini bar?
Woo, animated Tweety birds around my head. Woo. 46 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ex-Catholic girls gone wild. Her grade school nuns would like to slap her silly. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
I just called
you broke the show.
I called you a bad word.
You did.
I was kidding. It was comedy. And you fake cried. Fake comedy cried.
You got something in your teeth.
You're still a hole. Okay. And scene. Okay.
Oh,
all right. This hour brought to you by...
I need a drink.
TheraBreath Mouth Wedding Lozenges. Do they come in Chardonnay flavor? Pop a great-tasting mandarin mint TheraBreath Lozenge and help stop uncomfortable dry mouth fast. TheraBreath Mouth Wedding Lozenges available at Target, Walmart, Walgreens, and other fine stores. Oh, Travis forwards this email from somebody, I don't know what his name is. Is the show really that funny, or does it just seem that way because I'm always high when I watch it on current TV? Yes, it is probably because you're...
A little of both, maybe.
Stephanie Miller.
It's morning everywhere. So
right.
Wow. Oh right.
Watching some current.
That takes some dedication to get high this early in the morning.
The headline is Chris Christie not sweating CPACs. Well, he's sweating everything else, but
he's sweating. But
just picking up a pencil makes him he's not losing sleep over not being invited to the conservative political action conference. That's their prerogative. They say I'm nasty, but I don't give a damn.
Okay,
I was
Bobby.
Just freestyling that. That's not what he said. He said that's their prerogative, though.
Uh-huh.
They get to decide. I wish them the best. Boom! That's what he said. They said the event organizers snubbed him over his rhetoric toward House Republicans in the wake of Hurricane Sandy. They said he made it very hard for Republicans in the Congress at a time when we were trying to deal with fiscal restraint. You make it sound like storm relief was somehow important and you needed it in a timely manner. You're not invited. All right. Seth MacFarlane has ruled out an Oscar return. He received mixed reviews for his performance. Mm-hmm. One of my friends said they loved him, and then, I don't know, a lot of people. He said he had a lot of fun. He is not an experience he wants to repeat. He's come under fire for his risque jokes and songs such as We Saw Your Boobs, which I thought was hilarious.
I thought it was hilarious. I know some stick-up-the-butt liberals are saying it was sexist, it was awful.
Really?
That was
bad.
No, yeah, it was funny.
I thought it was funny. There's a difference between...
That's why, theoretically, we're a show that appeals to nobody.
Right.
Because we're too politically incorrect for liberals.
There's a difference between jokes about sex and gender and homosexuality and, you know, sexist and homophobic jokes.
We did see their boobs.
We did.
It's based on truth.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right, and it got great ratings. 45 million Wachacoosets people mm-hmm. watched. Anne Hathaway, it's acceptance speech.
She certainly does.
She reportedly rehearsed her acceptance speech a lot. I guess she was planning on winning. She thanked her husband and fellow Les Mis, cast members, but not before exclaiming, "It came true." See, it was a thing about. Remember, I dreamed a dream.
Mm-hmm.
So her dream
came
true. Clever. They say if her acceptance speech seemed rehearsed, it was because it reportedly was many, many times. She apparently practiced the speech in an effort to appear more likable. If you have to rehearse appearing likable and authentic.
There was a little bit of a backlash
right.
to Anne Hathaway. So
because of Les Mis?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was that thing going around Facebook. You know, there was the flow chart of what she was going to say in her acceptance speech.
Oh.
You know, that she was going to mention her mother who was in Les Mis and all that. She's kind of given the same thing over and over again. So a backlash was starting.
Leave her alone. You're lucky she even performed. She's made a nation of women want to be as thin as dying French prostitutes. And what's not great about that?
And sell their teeth.
She was incredibly convincing as a dirty French whore. Is that what? Is that an insult? Speaking of the Oscars, how much do we love Adele after she won her Oscar for Skyfall, her James Bond?
Which is the best...
She's a girl after my own heart. You know where she went?
Where?
In-N-Out. That's what a hamburger's all about.
I know exactly which In-N-Out she went
to. Hollywood.
The one on Sunset. Love. Yes. That's like a block and a half away from the Dolby Theater.
I know exactly.
That's what a hamburger's all about. Mm-hmm. Ben Affleck shaved off his lucky beard right at moments after his Argo win.
And then he was hit by a truck. No.
No. He was handed a pair of clippers by his wife, Jennifer Garner. He did it himself at the restaurant. The whole family was tired of the beard. Someone asked him why he felt it was good luck. Ben had the facial hair when he reemerged as a major Hollywood player.
Mm.
So he did it to mark the end of a chapter.
Okay.
You know what that means?
What?
I need to regrow in my unibrow.
To mark the end of what chapter?
No.
Wait a minute. What are you telling us?
It will make me a major Hollywood player again. And then we'll shave it off after I've won
an award?
A Marconi or something.
Whatever.
Marconi.
It was good luck for him, the beard. So I need to. I should not have tweezed the unibrow, is my point.
Do they still give Marconis?
I don't know. Cares about radio? Nobody.
No. There's no splashy.
Nobody.
No splashy award show for radio.
Flying about radio.
No, they don't.
And well done. Okay.
Radio, that's so 20th century.
What did a Booker once say, or a Hollywood publicist say to you once?
You have to realize how low on the entertainment totem pole radio is.
Oh, sorry, that was that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were trying to get a celebrity booking. They're like, what?
No, we don't do radio.
No one cares.
Radio?
What?
That's still
around.
Do
they still have that? Okay.
All right, Grandma.
All right. Kanye West, by the way, launched into another expletive-laden diatribe where he referred to himself as the musical equivalent of Pablo Picasso, Walt Disney, and Steve Jobs.
And he'll
be
hosting
Jobs.
Jobs.
Jobs?
Jobs.
Really?
Sorry. I'm sorry. He said no matter how they try to control you or the mother next to you tries to peer pressure you, you can do what you mother want. And I am Picasso. I'm Walt Disney. I'm Steve Jobs.
And he'll be hosting the Oscars next year.
Yeah. Well, they need someone. Yes. Everybody's saying no.
Kanye's so... He's precious.
He's a jackass.
Thank you, Mr. President. Yes, that's exactly right. I'm not sure if anyone cares about this, but Gawker wants us to know that Janet Jackson secretly married a Qatari businessman last year. She's all with the secret marriages. What's up with that?
No.
Tired of all the rumors that were not flying around regarding her wedding, Janet Jackson surprised the world today by announcing, apropos of nothing, she and obscenely wealthy Qatari businessman Wissam Al-Mana have been married since last year. All right, everyone, move on with your life. Okay.
And the world yawned.
Arlene in Alabama to close the show. Oh, my God, it's a screaming goat. Hi, Arlene.
One is the screaming goat that's all over the Internet and everything is actually a shorn sheep.
Oh.
No way, really?
Yes. I had pet goats for 20 years, I guess, so I know one when I see one. That's frivolous. Here's a couple of more serious ones. They do not.
Uh-oh, we're out of time for this. Oh, we ended with another goat scream.
Yeah.
That was a sheep. Oh, all right, thank you for that farm animal fun fact.
Okay.
She actually has a pet goat, not just the book. Okay, that's it for us. I'd like to thank Chris LaVoy, Jim Ward. Oh, goodbye, Lisa Ferguson at Current. Goodbye. It's her last day today. We love you. We'll see you tomorrow on the Stephanie Miller Show.